I'd had the choice to be here or somewhere else. I might have chosen somewhere else. It's a beautiful day, but we're glad that you chose to be here because this really is an important topic. I can't think of a more important topic relative to our health than what is it going to take for you and I to optimize our immune system? What can I do right now? What can you do as you leave this evening? How can you put together a plan that will make a difference, that could make the difference between you surviving this winter or not? A little sobering there to think that some of us might not make it through the winter simply because our immune system wasn't up to par. That's not an unexpected thing. Statistically speaking, we could easily say that there'd be several of us right here, right now, that aren't going to make it through the winter. And most of the time, that could have been completely avoided if we would have just taken advantage of a few simple but very important and often neglected principles. So those are some of the things that we're going to be talking about this afternoon. But since we're going to be talking about the most important factors to optimize your immune system, I want to start with the two most important ones. What do you think they might be? Is there a certain herb in the Andes Mountains that takes 2 weeks to find and to culture, and you want to just hold on to it for yourself because there's not enough of it to even share with your family? What is it? What is it that has the greatest potential to optimize your immune system right now? Well, I'm glad you have some opinions on that. I'd like to suggest to you that the most important factor is a willingness to give of yourself to others. As we're moving rapidly into the Christmas season here and preparing for the rituals of the Christmas season, we want to be thinking about, am I really giving of myself to others, or am I just stressed out trying to find something that somebody else might feel comfortable getting from me so I don't have to worry about what I'm going to get them for Christmas? Or are we really thinking about, what is it that person needs from me? It's possible that they don't need a present in the traditional sense as much as a piece of us emotionally, that they might just be craving and longing for that sense that we care for them, that we stop this hurried rush during Christmas to actually tell them that we care for them, that we love them, to ask them how they're doing, to stop and actually listen to them talk. It reminds me of a story of the book, well-written book, Tuesdays with Maury. Anybody ever read that book or watch the movie? It's this journalist who's writing books and world famous, and he decides that he's going to dedicate Tuesdays to be with his old college professor who's dying of a chronic condition. And every Tuesday, he comes rushing in late, trying to grab a sandwich or something so he can share it with Maury. And he relearns the lessons from his professor that he had learned so many decades before, that one of the most important characteristics of an individual is to be totally present, totally focused on what the other person is trying to tell us, instead of just waiting for just a pause in their sentence structure so that we can interject everything that we want to tell them. Have you ever been there? You just can't get a word in edgewise? You know, we need to make sure that we're not on the other end of that, that we are giving the people in our lives that we say we love, we think we love, time for us to be totally present with them. So, number one, giving of yourself. It was Scott Peck who said, love is the willingness to extend ourselves for the purpose of nourishing our own or somebody else's emotional or spiritual wellness. That's what love is. It's work. It's this giving of ourselves in a time, in an age when there's not so much of ourselves to give. Right? We're trying to hold on to ourselves as much as possible. But giving is one of the greatest opportunities that we have to optimize our immune system, to literally stimulate the natural killer cells of the immune system to activate against killing those cancer cells, activate killing those viruses and those bacteria. Now, along with that is a second and equally important characteristic of optimizing the immune system, and it really goes hand in hand with giving of ourselves, and that is the concept, the principle, the physiologic reality of gratitude. Now, I'm going to give all of us a chance to show a little gratitude today. Right now, actually, there's probably most of the people that are involved in organizing this little event are in the fellowship hall getting all decorated and looking beautiful. And if you walked by it, you probably smelled it. It smelled wonderful. How many of you here have had some role in getting ready for this presentation? And that includes inviting somebody to come with you. If you did that, if you invited somebody, if you had some role in setting up this program, please stand up. Come on, stand up, okay? And so all of us, let's give them a hand. Feel a little bit better? Okay, your immune system, my immune system, just taking the time to be grateful to be here, to be grateful to learn these new concepts, to be grateful for the fact that a lot of people took time and effort, a lot of time and effort to organize this. That literally does our heart good. That does our immune system powerfully. The amazingly powerful principles of giving and gratitude. In January of 2009, I had just finished right here giving a talk on optimizing your immune system. All different information, kind of put together in a different way. But after the presentation, a gentleman came up to me and introduced himself as a pastor from a church in Minnesota. And since this was in January, I had some understanding why he might want to be in Southern California instead of Minnesota. But he said, I have something very interesting I want to share with you. And he told me a story that transpired over 97 years ago in Minnesota, and it happened at the Hutchinson Seventh-day Adventist Seminary. It was written up in the local paper there in Minnesota, and I'm going to read it to you because this is a wonderful example of something that we can do when we find ourselves with a depressed immune system, when we find ourselves with a sickness that just is not going away, when we find ourselves in the middle of a pandemic, epidemic flu that is taking thousands and thousands of people, what am I going to do? What plan did you have when the SARS epidemic and the scare of SARS started to come through? What plan did you have in place when the bird flu scare came through in 2009? What plan did you have? What would you have done if your son, your daughter, your father, your mother were suffering through significant symptoms associated with the flu, associated with pneumonia? Well, let me just read this to you because this shows that there's some natural and yet very simple strategies that can have more effect than anything that we have tried in the past conventionally. I'll just read the entire, it's just a blurb, one column of the newspaper. Seminary clinches flu is the title. The Hutchinson Institute makes a record combating disease. On the authority of Dr. Fred Shepard, health officer of Hutchinson City, it may be stated that no public institution in the state of Minnesota has up to date made a record in handling influenza, the worldwide epidemic that has swept millions into their graves, like that to the credit of the Hutchinson Seventh-day Adventist Seminary. The seminary, with 120 of its 180 students and teachers housed under one roof, was invaded by the malady 3 weeks ago. Symptoms of the malady developed with some 90 of these, and under the direction of Dr. H.E. Larson, a graduate physician and member of the seminary faculty, every person showing indication of sickness was at once put to bed with a trained nurse taking temperatures and watching for symptoms of the epidemic. Okay, so principle number one. What do? When we wake up and we notice we have the sniffles, we're a little achy, and we got things to do. What do? We say, well, you know, it's just, I'm just a little achy. I mean, I gotta get through this. I got tests. I have errands. I have all these things that I have to do. Do you know that is the first mistake that millions of individuals made 97 years ago that ended up dying within days of that first symptom because they didn't stop and recognize what was going on. In light of the fact that they knew thousands and millions of people were dying, they still did not stop and address the problem. And this is an important statement for us to recognize, that today, I think of individuals who have even taken the time to do significant blood tests. They have shown significant health concerns, and then I never see them again. For whatever reason, the reality of what's happening inside their body was just too scary to deal with, and so they chose to deny it, to run away from it, in spite of the fact that as I was sharing that initial information with them, I told them, says, this is reversible. Now, fortunately, that doesn't happen that often. But at least for me, thankfully, with my patient, by the time they come to me, they really are willing to do something about this. But so often in life, are we aware of things that we could do that can dramatically influence our health, and yet, for whatever reason, the cares of this life, the challenges ahead of this, worrying about what somebody will say or not say, and we end up not doing that. So the first principle is make sure that we act within a week. No, we act right away. We do something about it right away. And the principle here is when the body is stressed in that way, it needs to have complete rest. It needs to have the opportunity to rejuvenate. Now, many of the principles that we're going to be going over today will look at ways to help accelerate the rejuvenation process. It's all about increasing the ability of the body to speed the healing process, number one. And number two, removing the things in our life that are slowing down the healing process. Said another way, we want to slow down aging and speed healing. So, at once they were put to bed and evaluated by a trained nurse, making sure that the symptoms were not getting worse. If those symptoms developed, the patient was required to remain in bed. Have you ever heard that? I think most of us have heard that, our mothers, our fathers telling us, Samuel, stay in bed. but I don't want to stay in bed, right? We think we're much better. We're starting to experience that renewed energy, but the system is tenuous. And the decisions that we make at certain times when we think we're doing okay can make the difference between relapse and even death. There were no drugs to be given at that time. There was no antibiotics at that time. There was not that they would have helped. It wouldn't have helped. They were given complete rest and quiet with careful regulation of diet and fomentations applied to the throat, chest, and abdomen. What are fomentations? Prior to the advent of antibiotic therapies, hospitals across the world used fomentations as the main treatment to help stimulate the immune system naturally in fighting the disease process. It's essentially the use of hot and cold in stimulating the immune system, hot drawing blood to that area, encouraging immune cells to come to the area where the infection is, and then the cold flushes the blood back away from that area, taking those immune cells that have been activated by that bacteria, by that virus, by that cancer cell, whatever it might be, and taking it back to other immune centers of the body, and now recruiting all those immune centers to make antibodies to fight against whatever is invading the body. Whenever there is an invasion, we need to recruit every available resource within the body to accomplish a cure. We don't want to just stay local. We want to activate the entire resources available to us. In hydrotherapy, the use of water as therapy, the use of hot and cold fomentations, or alternating between hot and cold therapies, will stimulate the immune system dramatically. Just this morning, I took part in hydrotherapy. I've been under a lot of stress over the last 2 months. A lot of good things happening, a lot of neat things, exciting things happening, but a lot of stress. Stress isn't always, bad things happening to us. It's usually a combination of challenges and opportunities. And of course, we all know that, or many of us understand that the same Chinese character that represents a challenge also represents opportunity. So when we're faced with challenges, we have, in essence, opportunities. What are we going to do with that? And that raises another point, if you're taking notes, that when we're under stress, what determines whether or not the immune system is strong or not is not the stress itself. You need to understand this. It's not the stress itself that determines or decreases our immune system. It is our perception of the stress and how we deal with that stress. And simply put, it's the difference between passive stress and active stress. If you're exposed to a situation and you're just wringing your hands and you just don't know what to do about this and you're paralyzed with an inability or just don't know where to go or how to address this problem, that is passive stress. And passive stress is extremely debilitating to our immune system. On the other hand, if once we recognize that we're just wringing our hands and we say, if I don't know what to do myself, I can go to somebody that does know. I can go to my spouse. I can go to my friend. I can go to my neighbor. I can go to my confidant. I can go to my pastor. I can go to my doctor. I can go to my counselor. And I can say, I don't know what to do. And because they're in positions to look from the outside in, they're usually going to be very helpful in helping us see something that we can't see right now because of that veil of stress. if we don't start turning that into active stress, where we're doing something about it, we're coming up with a plan. We're coming up with a list of things that we can do to take on this challenge. Maybe you've been diagnosed with cancer recently. Maybe you've been diagnosed with an autoimmune disease or some type of condition. Or maybe you just haven't been feeling well and you've been doing a lot of medical tests and you can't get diagnosed with anything. You have no idea what's going on. Sometimes it's worse not to get diagnosed than to know what you're dealing with so that you can actually develop a plan against it. So let me strongly encourage you to always be active when there's stress in your life. Don't sit and worry. Talk to those around you that you know can help you. Reach out to those who can help you. We're a community, and we can help each other. There's people that are longing to be able to help others, but they don't know unless they're asked many times. This treatment, in almost every case, reduced the temperature of the patients, and in a day or so, they were apparently well. Did you hear that? In a day or so. If you follow the principles of immediately acting on a condition, not waiting, not hoping that it'll just kind of go away on its own, but you act on it with objective principles. If your body's saying, I need rest, you need to give it rest. If your body's saying, I need to get outside into the sunlight, into the fresh air, and do some light walking, you need to do that. If you're feeling stressed and wondering why you can't get out of that stress, then those natural principles just outlined are critical steps in helping you overcome that. The next danger, of course, was that of relapse. To guard against relapse, every patient was required to remain in bed from 2 to 5 days after apparent full recovery. Now, you might be thinking, whoa, you're asking way, way too much. And in our world, that does seem like too much, doesn't it? But I'm just recounting for you what happened, what transpired nearly 100 years ago. And the challenge with us is that we get excited. We do a few little things and feel a little bit better and go, oh, okay, that works. And so even though I'm only at 50% strength, I'm back out trying to do 100%. What's going to happen? In the event that we're dealing with a serious pandemic flu, we have to be ready for that, folks. You know, they have cried wolf now a few too many times. But remember the end of the story? Okay, remember the end of the story. Just because they have cried wolf multiple times in the last so many years doesn't mean it's going to keep happening that way. There's a time coming when there's going to be, again, millions of people in our nation dying because of not understanding these principles. Okay, so let's prepare. So they were required to rest because the stakes were high. They knew that people were dying all around them. The stakes were high. And when the stakes are high, we need to develop a plan that's most likely to work. And, of course, the nurse and the doctor determined how long that individual should stay in bed depending on what their symptoms had been and the state of their flu affliction. As a result of this symptom of handling a disease, or the system, rather, of handling a disease that is scoring thousands of victims every day, there has not been one case that could have been called serious or a single death in the seminary, although there were more than 90 affected. The record is remarkable. It makes the ordinary method of dealing with flu appear irrational. End quote. Someday, there's going to be an opportunity for us to maybe think back to this time when we heard this. Okay? Simple strategies, starting with immediate action, complete rest, paying careful attention to diet, and careful attention to hydration, water inside, and using hot and cold therapies on the outside. By the way, one of the simplest things that we can do nowadays is to just stand in the shower and turn the water as hot as we can take it without burning the skin and apply it directly to the chest or to the throat area as it might be, depending on where the infection tends to be primarily. And keep that hot water pouring on those areas for 3 to 5 minutes. And then, as quickly as possible, turn it all the way cold. Now, that works in Minnesota. That works in Michigan, where I grew up. It doesn't work in Southern California because the benefit comes from the extremes. We're pretty good about getting the water hot. We're not very good about getting the water cold. Okay, and it's certainly not in terms of the extremes. So the way to address that is prepare by bringing a pot of water with ice in it. And you just take a washcloth, and after you've done that 3 to 5 minutes of hot, just turn off the water, take that washcloth full of ice water, and just rub it on the upper chest or the throat area for about 30 seconds. That's all it takes. And then put that washcloth back in, close the door, and put that hot water back on. That feels really good at that point. You can actually handle even hotter water the second time because now the circulation is taking that heat out of that area very rapidly because of that hot-cold contrast. And you do that back and forth 3 times. Hot 3 to 5 minutes, 30 seconds to 45 seconds, ice cold. Hot 3 to 5 minutes, and then back to cold for 30 to 45 seconds, and then back to hot for 3 to 5 minutes, and then end with cold. Now, if that doesn't invigorate your system, if that doesn't powerfully enhance your circulation and your immune system, I don't know what else can. Now, here's the trick. To get the most benefit of activating your immune system using this hot and cold contrast, immediately after you get out of the shower, you towel down, you dry off as quickly as you can, wrap in a sheet or a towel and get in bed. Get in bed and cover yourself up. It's better to have somebody helping you with this. Cover yourself up so that you're really nice and toasty and warm. And then stay in bed, preferably sleeping, at least resting, for 20 minutes before you get up. That 20-minute rest after that invigorating hot-cold contrast stimulates those immune centers, where all those lymph nodes are, stimulates those immune centers to dramatically activate what we call spontaneous blastogenesis, where those B cells that make antibodies against the specific viruses that are damaging you right now are just enhanced dramatically. Okay? It's that rest that comes after the activity. So having the right timing is really important in this process. Well, just in early December of 2010, not too long ago, the Institute of Medicine came out with a landmark recommendation. They stated that they had reviewed over 1,000 medical studies on vitamin D and how it affected health. And from their review on their committee, they basically said we need to increase this recommended daily intake of vitamin D from roughly 200 to 600. So for certain classes of individual, the recommendation for vitamin D was tripled. Now on the surface, that sounds like a victory. for all the world's leading researchers on vitamin D and its impact on physical, emotional health. But in fact, all the key researchers who have done extensive research on this were very upset about this ruling, because the ruling also said that extra level of vitamin D, 600 international units of vitamin D a day, was now more than adequate to meet all the needs of bone health, and that the research clearly indicated that that was beneficial for bone health. But, they said, all these other claims that vitamin D should be measured in the blood and that vitamin D has a benefit for the heart and the immune system and cancer is unsubstantiated. That's essentially what the report said. Now, I have to tell you that is contrary to everything that I've been reading for the last 8 years. I know these research. I've gone to the last 3 international conferences on vitamin D, and I've taken the time to talk with Dr. Robert Heaney and other researchers who are the world's leading experts. I remember Dr. Madrid, by the way, who's written probably the best book on vitamin D that's available to lay public, The Vitamin D Prescription. He and I were talking with Dr. Robert Heaney, who had been the chairman of the Department of Medicine at Creighton University for many years. He's now in his early 80s, and he's still vibrant, and he's lecturing all around the world, and he sits on these committees with the Food and Drug Administration. He's on those committees, but he is the dissenting voice. It's really sad that the one person who knows the most about a condition has to be the dissenting voice. But you know, that's the way it is most of the time. Usually, if there's a majority opinion in the world in which we live in, it's usually not the right opinion. It's usually the minority who have, hopefully the minority that's taken the time to really try to understand the information, they're the ones that are more correct. Maybe not completely correct, because in this life, I don't think we can say, I certainly can't say I understand everything about vitamin D. But I have passionately taken the time to try to understand it. And everything that I've read over the last 8 years, every patient that I've seen, I've measured their 25-hydroxy vitamin D and tested them to see where they're at. I've seen how that changes the clinical picture of a patient's health. So as Dr. Madrid and I were speaking with Dr. Robert Heaney, we said to him, Dr. Heaney, how much vitamin D should we recommend to somebody who's trying to prevent cancer? And he kind of looked at it. And some of you have heard this before. He looked at us incredulously and he said, well, you're the doctors. He said, how much cancer do you want to prevent? And we felt a little foolish, but we chuckled just the same, because we got the message, is that so oftentimes in medicine and in health and public health in particular, it's what seems to be most important is a public policy statement as opposed to what's really best for the individual. What's really best for our health? Too much thought is given into, well, how does this policy statement influence all the other big players in the healthcare community? Do we ever make decisions in life based on what everybody else is thinking? Or make decisions not based on what's really best for us or for our friend or neighbor, but what's really best for our pocketbook? Have you ever made decisions like that? Is it possible that institutions can make decisions like that? We're all human. So, but the key here is that we try to follow the path that is most objective. What does the research actually say? And it's very clear as you look at the research that there is more evidence today on the value of optimizing your vitamin D than there is on the value of those of you who are still smoking to stop smoking. Did you just catch what I just said? Okay. In other words, I would rather be a vitamin D sufficient smoker than a non-smoker who thinks, I don't need to worry about the vitamin D at all. I just read a report that said it wasn't that important after all. You know, if you want to find a reason to avoid walking, to avoid exercising, to avoid eating vegetables, you can find it in the medical literature. If you look hard enough, if you dig long enough, if you go to the library, you can find some reference that you can copy and take home with you and show to your wife or your husband or to your friend or your neighbor or your colleague who's bothering you about trying to live healthfully. You can find it. Okay? Ultimately, though, we need to be honest with ourselves and ask ourselves the question, what is logic? What is most likely to be of benefit to me? It was Gandhi who once said, an error does not become truth by reason of multiplied propagation, nor does the truth become error because no one will see it. Wow, powerful. And it was Arthur Schopenhauer, a German philosopher in the late 1700s and who passed away in 1860, he said, every truth passes through three stages. Have you heard this before? This is really powerful. Before it is recognized, every truth typically must pass through three different phases. The first phase is public and professional ridicule. That's crazy. Are you kidding me? Where did you get that information? Don't you know? You should know better than that. Have you ever gone through that phase? And the second, it is violently opposed. It's not just ridiculed anymore. We're not just laughed at anymore, but it's actually violently opposed. And then thirdly, there's probably more than three stages, but ultimately, well, it is just regarded as self-evident. Oh yeah, we knew that all the time. Well, we're somewhere in those first two stages right now where it deals with vitamin D. Don't give up on a willingness to understand your vitamin D levels. If you are not one that's easily coaxed into the laboratory to draw your blood, I would strongly recommend to you that at least get your vitamin D test taken. Now, one of the ramifications of this most recent report is that I suspect insurance companies are going to now be saying it's no longer recommended. So don't be surprised if that's not going to be covered by your insurance plan. So make sure that you have access to a healthcare provider that can make that available for you at a reduced cost. Okay? It may be something that you have to pay for out of your pocket, but don't pay the cash price at the labs. Good providers can develop contracts to get significant breaks for you. So be aware of that. The vitamin D is so critical because by itself, just taking 2,000 units of vitamin D a day can lower the risk of a flu by 70%. And that's just 2,000. Now let me say, based on my clinical experience of testing everybody for the last 8 years, 2,000 units of vitamin D rarely, if ever, increases your blood levels of vitamin D significantly. At least not in 3 to 6 months it won't. Rarely it would do that. I could count on one hand the number of patients that had optimal levels of vitamin D, at least above 40 nanograms per ml, when they weren't taking vitamin D supplementation. I've seen it happen, and I was amazed when I saw it happen. But it's definitely not the norm. 99.9% of patients need to supplement vitamin D, even if they're outside in the sun. I learned the hard way myself. I thought I was getting plenty of sun until I found out my vitamin D was 25. And I was supplementing and being in the sun, so I need to adjust. So you're never going to know unless you objectively evaluate. Don't make assumptions. See, one of the greatest detriments to our health is that we make assumptions about our health. We say, oh, I don't need to get this checked out. I go for a walk every day. Well, that's good. It's good that we go for a walk every day. But are you suggesting that going for a walk every day in of itself is sufficient for you to be healthy? It doesn't work that way. Right? So we have to come up with a plan. We need synergy. We need multiple things in that plan for us to be able to get that optimal health. The greatest example of the power of vitamin D is last July in 2009, I had the privilege to fly to Geneva and give a presentation. They're at the World Health Organization headquarters in the University of Geneva on diabetes, actually. It was a large international health conference. And getting to Geneva ended up being more stressful than we imagined. Because of delays, we were rerouted and ended up taking 2 all-night flights to get to Geneva from here. It just got rerouted all over the place. And my parents, and especially my mother, who at the time was 85 years old, which means she's 86 now. She used to always tell us when she was younger that she was 85. And so we joke with her now. So now you're telling the truth. And she's just as spunky as she ever was. But she, because of all the stress and preparation and the lack of sleep and the lack of exercise and the lack of normal rhythm to life and sunlight, we got to the hotel in Geneva. And I could tell that my mother was not doing well. She was tired. And she said, Wes, you know, I'm so sorry. We were beginning a 3-week tour of multiple lectures. She says, I'm so sorry. When I feel like this, I know I'm going to be sick and in bed for at least a week. I feel horrible about this. It's going to ruin our trip. And fortunately, I'd planned ahead. And I had brought this little bottle that had a certain liquid in it called liquid D3. And I had paid attention to the 14 top researchers and clinicians in the world who had written a paper and published it in a medical journal stating that if you have an acute infection of any kind, you can give an individual 1,000 units of vitamin D per day, per pound body weight. Okay? So if you have a 200-pound individual, my mother does not weigh 200 pounds, just in case you're confusing the two. Okay? If you have a 200-pound individual, they can take 200,000 units of vitamin D once a day for 3 days. Now, what I like to do is divide it in two. Take 100,000 twice a day for 3 days. A full dropper of vitamin D liquid is about 50, 60,000 units, roughly. And so I did a quick calculation, and I said, okay, Mom, I'm going to give you a full dropper of this tonight, and in the morning I'm going to give you another dropper. And she said, oh, you think this is going to help? And I go, I think it's going to help you, Mom. And I wasn't sure because I didn't see her sick very often. She was a very healthy, dynamic individual. But this time, she was really looking bad. She'd gone through cancer 3 years before, almost died from that. She had had a broken hip and had had a terrible experience with that. But she rebounded every time. Well, the next morning, she woke up, and it was like, it's like she woke up on a spring day and went for a walk in the fresh air. It was just like a dramatic transformation. And that, by the way, has happened hundreds and hundreds of times in my own experience. So take advantage of that opportunity. Well, we are rapidly running out of time. So let me quickly go through some items. There are some ways that we can objectively evaluate how to optimize our immune system. One is to be aware of what our blood insulin levels are. Another one is to be aware of what our blood estrogen levels are. A study done by Dr. Mark Gunter from the Albert Einstein College of Medicine, published in the Journal of the National Cancer Institute in January of 2009, he found that when the insulin levels were high in the blood, that increased the risk of breast cancer by 46%. Now, this is real critical because when we talk about elevated insulin levels, that's associated with prediabetes. That's associated with diabetes. That's associated with metabolic syndromes. That's associated with weight gain. It's associated with the majority of high blood pressure. Don't you want to know what's causing these problems? And many times it's an insensitivity to insulin that causes the fasting insulin to go high. But you know what? It's not just overweight or obesity that does that. The majority of the effect of obesity and overweight risk on increasing breast cancer actually comes from the fact that the insulin levels go up. So how do we evaluate that? Well, the best way to do that is with a two-hour glucose tolerance test. We drink some sugar and then check your insulin levels before the sugar and 2 hours after the sugar to see if you have an insulin problem so that we can aggressively manage it. Another test with the estrogens, Dr. Gunter found that if the estrogens were elevated, the risk of breast cancer went up 59%. There are definitely things that we can do to improve estrogen levels. And by the way, most of those involve natural, simple remedies. I recently had a patient who I did a blood test on them, and iron levels are extremely high. The ferritin level, the storage form of iron, was extremely high. 1 out of 10 Americans has a gene for an elevated iron storage. But 1 out of 30 have 2 pairs of genes for it. So it's strongly genetic. And unless we screen for the iron and the ferritin and the total iron binding capacity, we're not going to know. Up to 1 out of 10 of people can have some variation of that. And it's a powerful cause of stress on the body that can lead to cancer, can lead to heart disease, can lead to stroke, can lead to fatigue, can lead to all kinds of problems, liver damage and immune system damage. Simple tests that can be done, okay, to improve the immune system. Thyroid is another example. Oftentimes when thyroid is evaluated, we're just seeing whether or not somebody has an obvious thyroid problem. Well, what about the subtle thyroid problems? You see, it's the subtle thyroid problems that are most likely to be causing that insidious increase in heart disease, that insidious effect on depressing the immune system and preventing the immune system from accomplishing what it otherwise could have. So make sure that you are getting the right thyroid test. Selenium has been found to be an important factor in decreasing the risk of many cancers, including bladder cancer. And what the researchers have found, it was Dr. Margaret published in the Cancer Prevention Journal in December of 2008. She said that the way selenium works to decrease the risk of cancer is that it normalizes the expression of the P53 gene that influences cancer risk. So see, it's not the gene that causes cancer. It's whether the gene is turned on or turned off. It's whether the gene is getting the nutrients it needs to work the way God intended it to work. Okay, are you getting the right diet? Today you're going to be learning more about diet during the cooking demonstration. Are you taking the time to come up with a nutritional program that is giving your body the pieces that it needs, that it was designed to use to optimize the immune system? Are you getting that? Well, we could go on and on and on. And let me just end. Let me end with a short discussion about one of the most important factors that influences not only the immune system, but our tendency to gain weight. More and more doctors are recognizing that unless we get this piece right, we're not going to be able to accomplish our goals for weight loss, or maybe weight isn't an issue for us, right? Because we're all different. We're all biologically different. That's why there's no one standard for everybody, okay? There's general principles that we can all take advantage of, but there's always an importance to fine-tune a program that's designed for you based on your individuality. And researchers are finding that unless we pay attention to the sleep cycle rhythm, we are placing ourselves in harm's way. When we choose to go to bed later than roughly 10 o'clock, and all this is going to ruffle a lot of our feathers. It ruffles my own feathers, by the way, so don't, you know, I'm preaching to myself as well here. But see, what we feel like doing doesn't change the facts. The feeling that I feel like staying up late and getting more work done so that I can feel better about all the things that I haven't gotten done the rest of the day, that doesn't change the fact that if I don't go to bed sometime soon after 10 o'clock, that now I am missing a big part of the healing opportunity that night has in store for me. Roughly 50% of the healing, the rejuvenating, the chemically, physically, physiologically healing process that goes on in our body occurs during those first 2 hours between 10 and 12 o'clock. You might be thinking, well, wait a minute, how about my brother who lives in Michigan and they're 3 hours difference, so does that mean that I need to go to bed at 10 o'clock their time? Okay, a little cynicism, okay? It has to do with the circadian rhythm where you're at right now, okay? Okay, which adds to the whole point that we need to focus on ourselves where we are right now, not worry about other people where they're at. That's not going to help us. Okay, we need to focus on ourselves right now. What do I need to become optimally healthy? And so the melatonin production that occurs primarily during the early hours between 10 and 12, that is the fix-it and rejuvenate hormone that we don't want to miss out on. If we're worried about premature aging, then this should be a primary interest of ours. Am I missing out on that healing process, which means it's another way of saying of that process that slows down biologic aging? And maybe it's not that it slows it down, is that it allows it to progress the way it was intended to progress, as opposed to this accelerated aging that we have come to accept as normal aging. It's how you define the terms. Studies have shown that if we go to bed 3 hours later than we normally do, on the morning that we wake up after, even if we slept that 7 or 8 hours that we normally sleep, we just wake up 3 hours later, even if we got the same amount of sleep, our immune system the next day will be depressed by 50%. Those natural killer cells that are licensed to kill, to destroy bacteria and cancer and viruses, they are now 50% depleted. Now, if you go and fight a battle with 50% less soldiers than you intended to use that day, what's going to happen to the rest of your soldiers? They're going to be in harm's way as well. So it's little wonder that we struggle so much with our immune system. There are opportunities here to improve our immune system. What were the most important strategies? What were the two things that were clearly most important in optimizing our immune system? Giving of ourselves. In other words, showing true love, a willingness to extend ourselves for the purpose of nurturing somebody's spiritual or emotional wellness. And number two, gratitude. Taking the time to show gratitude. Not just once a week, not just once a day, but frequently throughout the day, looking for opportunities to show gratitude, even in situations of great stress. Nothing could help decrease the tension in our lives, the tension in other people's lives, than to show gratitude, than to say, oh, by the way, you know, right in the middle of an argument, by the way, did I tell you how much I appreciated what you did yesterday for me? you want a good way, a really healthy way to calm down a tense situation? Showing gratitude is it. And I'd like to suggest to you today that as we are moving further into this Christmas season, that we also take the opportunity to, well, take advantage of the power of forgiveness. It involves two things. It involves recognizing that we deserve to be forgiven, accepting forgiveness from other people. You can't give what you don't have, right? If I just said, you just need to start forgiving people for what they did, but if you can't get to the point where you're accepting forgiveness from others, you're not prepared, you're not ready to forgive other people for what they've done to you. You don't know how. You don't understand. So let me suggest to you that the heart of the matter with respect to giving of ourselves and showing gratitude is being willing to humble ourselves and to accept forgiveness in our lives and then to liberally give it to anyone who we can think of that merits it. And when I say merited, I don't mean they deserve forgiveness. I don't deserve forgiveness. You don't deserve forgiveness. But we give it unconditionally because what? Because that is what liberates us from the stresses in life that damage our immune system. There's nothing more powerful than an act of forgiveness and being able to liberate ourselves from those bonds of hostility that are inflaming our immune system. The antidote for inflammation, you can test it in the blood, that cardiac CRP, the antidote for inflammation is forgiveness. Okay? Hostility is inflammation. The antidote for hostility is forgiveness. Let's think about that. Let's ponder that this evening. And I'm sure that'll generate some interesting questions. So thank you for coming. And I'm grateful. I'm grateful for all those like Elise and Pastor Sam and Don and all those who've worked so hard to put together this dinner with the doctor. I'm hungry. I don't know about you. I'm ready for a good meal. I'm ready for some more information on how to prepare meals that will keep my immune system strong. So thank you for coming.